Discharges from roads in the North Coast region, update on existing regulatory education programs, Maggie Robinson. Oh, and then there's an et al., so there may be more.
We are an et al., definitely.
So if the et al.s can introduce yourself as you speak, or maybe why don't you just do it at the first, it might be easy.
Yes, I'll be...
And being an attorney, I do give respect to et al., so...
Getting situated here. Okay, so chairman, members of the board, my name is Maggie Robinson. I'm an engineering geologist in the Southern Timber Unit in the Non-Point Source Division. Today, I'll be going over informational item number 5, discharges from roads in the North Coast region, an update on existing regulatory and education programs. In addition to myself, Tom Williams, Dave Fowler, Mona Doherty, as well as John Sherman from the U.S. Forest Service, will be speaking during this presentation. I will be emceeing. So, during this presentation, we'll be going over 5 main topics: why roads are important, the North Coast Regional Board's existing permits and programs for roads and water quality protection, gaps in our current regulation, our nascent rural roads education and outreach program as well. There will also be an opportunity for questions and discussions both at the end and at various points during this presentation. So, why are roads important? They connect our communities. They allow for the flow of goods and services. They promote travel and education. And they aid in land and resource management. At the same time, roads and disturbed areas associated with them can produce and transport significant amounts of sediment and can have significant adverse impacts on water quality. So what's next is a very generalized discussion on what those impacts are and how roads can contribute to them. Improperly designed or maintained roads can capture and concentrate flows, which can result in erosion and subsequent sediment delivery of excess sediment, as well as hydrocarbons, copper, heavy metals, and trash to water courses. Roads that have direct routes of drainage or overland flow of road runoff to water courses or lakes are called hydrologically connected. Undersized or improperly designed crossings can lead to plugging and overtopping, which can result in erosion of the fill at the crossing and or diversion of flows down the road. In addition to undersizing, shotgun culverts, where the outlet end of the culvert projects out over the fill slope, and culverts that are not set to grade, can act as barriers to migration of fish and other aquatic species. Ditch relief culverts spaced at 2 infrequent intervals can lead to concentration of water, resulting in erosion of the ditch and at the outlet, as well as delivery of excess sediment to watercourses. Additionally, improperly drained roads can alter hill slope hydrology, leading to saturated road fill, which in turn can result in fill failures and excess sediment and debris deposition into watercourses. Get this here. Improperly drained and designed roads can destabilize slopes and fail, resulting in large quantities of excess sediment being delivered to watercourses. You can see there's a failure in both the grade above the road as well as failure of the fill below. And here are some more examples. I think these get the point across. So I've used the term excess sediment a number of times during the previous slides, and there's a reason I chose that term. Excess sediment is defined as soil, rock, and or sediment from human-related activities that is discharged to waters of the state in an amount that could be deleterious to beneficial uses or cause a nuisance. The beneficial uses that are most impacted from excess sediment in the North Coast region are municipal and domestic supply, groundwater recharge, freshwater replenishment, warm freshwater habitat, cold freshwater habitat, migration of aquatic organisms, spawning, reproduction, and early development. Excess sediment not only fills the pools needed for that, it also results in the shallowing and widening of watercourse channels, which results in higher water temperatures that can see the upper limits of survivability for the aquatic species. Rare, threatened, or endangered species. Commercial sport fishing, Native American culture and tradition, as well as subsistence fishing. We have 23 sediment TMDLs that identify road-related excess sediment as contributing to the 303D impairment listings of watercourses. Roads are also identified as one of or the major sediment source in over a dozen of our major watersheds in the North Coast region. So what are we doing to regulate discharges from roads in order to minimize sediment impacts? We at the Water Board do this through a variety of waivers, general waste discharge requirements, watershed-wide waste discharge requirements and ownership-wide ones. We also have NPDES permits that are designed to prevent and minimize discharges from logging roads, county roads, Forest Service roads, and our state road system. And to start off that discussion, we're going to go to Tom Williams.
Board Chairman, board members, my name is Tom Williams. I'm an engineering geologist with the Northern Timber Unit. And I'm going to be talking about timber permits and roads. So the forest practice rules are the collection of regulations that are promulgated by the Board of Forestry and Fire Protection under which commercial timber harvest is practiced in California. Compliance with the forest practice rules is part of the basis for our own timber waivers and WDRs. So our permit program to deal with timber permits has evolved from focusing on roads within individual timber harvest plans and on industrial timber management plans to more comprehensively addressing roads on a watershed or ownership basis. Okay, and I'm going to start off by talking about our general waste discharge requirements. These general WDRs were established to address sediment discharges related to timber harvest activities on non-federal lands. This permit requires the preparation of an erosion control plan to identify and treat controllable sediment discharge sources, and I'm going to talk about what that means in a second. They address sediment discharge sources within harvest units and on pertinent roads on a harvest plan by harvest plan basis. When I'm talking about pertinent roads, that means a road leading to and from the timber harvest plan area. So getting back to that definition of a controllable sediment discharge source, that's a source that is discharging or has a potential to discharge sediment in violation of the basin plan. It's caused or affected by human activity, and it can feasibly or reasonably respond to treatment. And most of these CSDSs are specifically road related. So under this permit, you're required to submit an erosion control plan. So these erosion control plans must inventory controllable sediment discharge sources within the THP area, prioritize the CSDSs for treatment, and propose a treatment schedule. The erosion control plan is usually reviewed as part of the CAL FIRE review team process. And after the THP is approved, the landowner applies for general WDR coverage from the Regional Water Board. Regular inspections are required, and an annual inspection report is submitted by the landowner. And all controllable sediment discharge sources must be treated before the THP is terminated. A notice of termination to unenroll from general WDR coverage is filed with the regional board, and often a termination inspection is conducted by staff before the unenrollment is granted. So we also have general waste discharge requirements for non-industrial timber management plans. This was an order that was passed back in 2013. It handles controllable sediment discharge sources in much the same way as the general WDRs, either on a notice of timber operations area, where the timber operations are going to occur during a given year, and that's what we call Tier A coverage. And Tier B coverage covers the entire non-industrial timber management plan area. And the last timber permit I'm going to talk about is the general waiver of waste discharge requirements. This was adopted back in 2014, and it provides waiver coverage for discharges from low-impact timber operations. So this includes things like emergencies and exemptions under the timber harvest plan review process. And these THPs are handled similarly to the general WDRs with preparation of an erosion control plan to identify and treat controllable sediment discharge sources.
Okay, Maggie Robinson. This next segment, I'll be talking about watershed-wide waste discharge requirements. In particular, BEAR and the watershed-wide waste discharge requirements for timber harvest activities conducted by Humboldt Redwood Company in BEAR and Jordan Creeks. So BEAR and Jordan Creeks are adjacent watersheds in the lower Eel drainage. Together, the two watersheds total just over 8,500 acres. They have similar geologies, fluvial processes, and management histories. This is why they have very similar permits. So let's go over a little bit of the history and the regulatory background of BEAR and Jordan Creeks to get a sense of how these permits and why these permits came about. In 1996-97, exceptionally large storm events triggered massive landslides and debris torrents in both watersheds. Many of these failures were in part due to poor past road construction practices. The following year, the Regional Water Board, CAL FIRE, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the California Geologic Survey determined that BEAR and Jordan Creeks were two of five watersheds that were significantly cumulatively impacted by sediment discharges resulting from the 96-97 storms. As Tom stated earlier, the general WDRs for timber operations were adopted in 2004. The following year, the Regional Water Board determined that these significantly cumulatively impacted watersheds were not eligible to be permitted under the general waste discharge requirements. As a result of the board's determination of ineligibility, the BEAR and Jordan watershed-wide waste discharge requirements were developed and adopted in 2011 and 2014, respectively. The watershed-wide waste discharge requirements require Humboldt Redwood Company to address road and other non-road related sediment sources. They call for regular updates to the existing road management plans for BEAR and Jordan Creeks, each of which contain a complete inventory of road-related sediment sites and schedules to have all work done on those sites but to be completed by October 15th, 2015 and October 2015 and October 2017, respectively, as well as decommissioning of lower slope roads within the watersheds. It calls for annual road inspections and for erosion control plans for non-road-related sites to be submitted with THPs. The WDR the Waste Discharge Requirement Administration is very streamlined. Humboldt Redwood Company submits an annual work plan at the beginning of the year, listing upcoming THPs and roadwork. Regional Water Board staff review the work plans and provide input. THPs go through the review team process, with staff providing first review comments and attending inspections. The waste discharge requirements have a streamlined enrollment process. CAL FIRE approved THPs in the Jordan Creek and Bear Creek watersheds are automatically enrolled, provided they meet the requirements of the waste discharge requirements. At the end of the year, Humboldt Redwood Company conducts inspections of the THPs and the roadwork and the related BMPs that are used. The company then submits an annual summary and monitoring report on that year's work. So Humboldt Redwood Company has been submitting work plans and enrolling THPs in Bear Creek since 2011. During this time, all of the road erosion sites have been treated, and all 31 miles of road within the watershed have been storm-proofed. Shortly after the adoption of the Jordan Creek watershed-wide waste discharge requirements this past August, Humboldt Redwood Company submitted the first annual work plan for Jordan Creek. Currently, one timber harvest plan is enrolled with 13 erosion sites listed for treatment. And that concludes the segment on watershed-wide waste discharge requirements. And Tom will be speaking on ownership-wide WDRs.
Tom Williams again. So I'm going to talk about the Green Diamond Resource Company roads waste discharge requirements, which were adopted by the board back in June of 2010. This road management plan that I'm going to be talking about is part of the Green Diamond Resource Company Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan. So this road management plan is a comprehensive program to control sediment discharge from roads that includes systematically upgrading the road system and decommissioning roads that will not no longer be used, maintaining a prioritized sediment source inventory, and then implementing routine road maintenance and monitoring of the road system. So just to talk about the Green Diamond ownership, this is a map that kind of shows where the Green Diamond lands are located, primarily in northern Humboldt County and southern Del Norte County along the coast, and includes portions of all these watersheds listed on the right. There's approximately 401,000 acres of timberlands that are owned by Green Diamond Resource Company. So the Green Diamond waste discharge requirements for roads, as part of this aquatic habitat conservation program, Green Diamond reports that they will spend approximately $2.5 million per year through the year 2022 to treat high and moderate priority sediment sources. As part of this effort, each year they design and submit detailed annual work plans that talks about the work that will be conducted over the coming year. And they perform a post-treatment effectiveness monitoring as part of this. So the Green Diamond WDRs for roads are intended to reduce sediment discharges from roads by improving road construction and maintenance practices, reducing road mileage through decommissioning unused roads. Often these roads are low in the watershed near the watercourses themselves, and upgrading existing roads to reduce sediment delivery to streams. We believe that an ownership roads WDR provides better and more efficient protection of the beneficial uses of water associated with road management and maintenance activities, because it takes an ownership-wide approach to addressing sediment discharges from roads. Instead of trying to deal with roads on this fragmented THP process where you're just dealing with the roads leading to and from the timber harvest area, this takes a more ownership-wide approach and tries to deal with the worst sediment sources first. It also provides Green Diamond with greater regulatory efficiency by focusing their program. So when you're talking about the Green Diamond road system, you're talking about over 600 miles of mainline roads, almost 2,200 miles of management roads, and of these, over 1,700 miles of roads are planned to be temporarily decommissioned as part of this program, and 126 miles of roads are to be permanently decommissioned. So there's both short-term aspects, planning aspects to this road management plans, and then dealing with immediate risk. The long-term plan is to upgrade the road system, to decommission bad roads, And as Maggie and any other speakers will be talking about, hydrologically disconnecting roads as part of the long-term plan. For immediate risks, the road management plan deals with treatment priority based on likelihood and volume of sediment delivery. So it's dealing with the worst sites first and addressing both active and chronic erosion sources and minimizing future discharges. And as part of the road management plan, mainline and appurtenant roads that are pertinent to active THPs are inspected every year. You know, as they find sites that don't look like they need to have immediate repair, but could, you know, get worse quickly, they put those on a watch list site, and those roads sites are inspected every year. Their secondary road system is inspected on a three-year rotation, and then after big storm events and also during storm events, they send their crews out to look at their road systems and conduct emergency inspections. Okay, and next, Dave Fowler is going to talk about the Board of Forestry rules package.
Good morning. My name is Dave Fowler. I'm a geologist with the Southern Timber Unit. And real quickly before I start, I just want to say I was at the combined board meetings 2 weeks ago. I spoke in front of the Board of Forestry last week, and I'm here this week, and I indeed consider it a very big privilege to attend the various different board meetings. The forest practice rules are a collection of regulation that's promulgated by the Board of Forestry and Fire Protection, under which commercial timber harvest is practiced in California. Compliance with the forest practice rules is part of the basis for our own regulation waivers and WDRs. The road rules is a package of reorganized, revised, and new rule language that will become part of the forest practice rules in January of 2015. It's called the Road Rules 2013 because it was approved last year at the end of 2013, but it won't actually become part of the forest practice rules until this coming January 2015. The development of the forest practice rules has been a quite a long process. Work on the rules began in 1999, and since the very beginning, regional water board staff have worked cooperatively and collaboratively with staff from the Board of Forestry, Cal Fire, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, California Geological Survey, National Marine Fisheries, as well as members of the timber industry, environmental groups, and members of the public. Over this 15-year period, several regional board staff members have worked on it, most recently Maggie and myself. As I mentioned, although there are some very important new sections included in the road rules package, it's primarily a reorganization of existing rules. Over the years, as sections were incorporated into the forest practice rules, various different things dealing with roads, you know, were incorporated in parts of the rule book all over. And so the road rules is trying to reorganize, bring all those rules under one section. But in addition to just bringing them under one section, it's also organizing them into a logical flow. Areas of planning, design, mapping, construction, reconstruction, erosion control is a very important part, use, maintenance, abandonment, and then watercourse crossings. In addition to the reorganization, the road rules also contain several revised and new rules that are very important to water quality. In the definitions, there are 13 revised definitions and 18 new definitions. One of the revised definitions is hydraulic disconnection. And you heard Tom and Maggie mention that term. It's one that's very important to water quality. The rule was, or the definition was revised to take prescriptive language out of the definition and put it into the enforceable part of the rules to make the definition clearer and more understandable. It's something that's at the very heart, actually, of the whole road rules package. Originally, this definition was adopted as part of the Salmonid protection rules in 2009, but under the road rules, it becomes statewide. Two new and very important definitions for water quality are significant sediment discharge and significant existing or potential erosion sites. Significant sediment discharge is used over 40 times in the road rules. Both these terms are based on the same underlying principle of any discharge that would violate water quality requirements. And the term water quality requirements is one that's already defined in the forest practice rules. It was adopted by a vote of the Board of Forestry in 2010. And in essence, water quality requirements means the basin plan. The wording for it was taken directly from our comment letter on the anadromous salmonid protection plans. And just a couple of new rules that are important to water quality. Road inventories. Inventories, prioritization, and treatment of existing and potential erosion sites. Currently, there is no direct requirement for road inventories. Under the road rules, inventories will be required statewide. The language for the road inventories is based in large part on our general WDR erosion control plan requirements. Then also, new roads and landings will have to be planned from the very beginning and constructed to be hydrologically disconnected. In addition, existing roads and landings will have to be upgraded to be hydrologically disconnected, or if they can't feasibly be disconnected, then treated to minimize their connection. Then also winter inspections. One of the gaps in the current forest practice rules is that although roads are required to be maintained for between 1 and 3 years after the completion of a timber harvest plan, there's no requirement to actually go out and look at the roads to see if they need to be maintained. Under the road rules, during the maintenance period, the roads will be required to be inspected at least once a year, and one of those inspections during the maintenance period will be conducted with a CAL FIRE inspector. Once again, this requirement is based on the success of the monitoring and inspection requirements of our waivers and WDR. Then it should be noted that the road rules package was specifically crafted to complement the requirements in our existing permits. And so rather than duplicating, they really complement each other well. And so it won't require any adjustment or any modification to our existing permits.
Maggie Robinson. I put this slide in just to give board members an opportunity to ask any questions. We're at the end of the segment that goes over our timber permits, and so we're going to be segueing into another set of permits and programs that we have. So does anybody have any questions about what we've talked about so far with respect to timber and permitting?
Just a point, Maggie, just so everybody recognizes that everything you've just covered addresses only private lands, private and state lands.
Yes.
Not, so we're dealing with non-federal lands here.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And I do want to say that what I've seen is we've had a slow and steady growth on how we're handling roads. And one reason that's important is some have commented that we tend to regulate the regulated, i.e. the timber industry. And I don't think it's fair that they can't discharge so much on the roads and others can. So I think, again, you're building a program for equity. And then I think the five counties program where the counties, as far as I know, are volunteering and green and upgrading is just tremendous value to our programs. And
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so speaking of the five counties, that's what we're going to be talking about next. And I'll state my name again, Maggie Robinson.
And I'm cute on your slide. And
I'll be going over the waiver of waste discharge requirements and general water quality certification for county road management and activities conducted under the Five Counties Salmonid Conservation Program. This is affectionately known as the 5C waiver, and I will be referring to it as such throughout this presentation. So, as stated in the introduction, there are more than 20 TMDLs in the North Coast region for sediment impaired watersheds. Prior to the adoption of the 5C waiver, in 2013, discharges from county road maintenance activities were not comprehensively covered. So going back to 1999, the five northern counties of Mendocino, Humboldt, Del Norte, Trinity, and Siskiyou County developed the 5C Salmonid Conservation Program in response to the listing of coho as a threatened species. In 2002, the 5C Road Manual was developed. I should call it the 5C Program Road Manual. In May 2013, the 5C waiver was adopted, with Humboldt County enrolling as being the first county to enroll in July of that year. So the waiver has three main components: the waiver of waste discharge requirements, a general 401 water quality certification, and a monitoring and reporting plan. Staff also prepared a mitigated negative declaration for the waiver, and this is important. This factors in. So the benefits of the waiver and why we put this together, the need was that the 5C waiver is based on an already existing program, the 5C program. It relies on the implementation of the BMPs and the monitoring protocols outlined in the 5C road manual. It has a streamlined enrollment process. Enrollees simply admit a notice of intent to adopt and follow the 5C program. It has an included general 401 water quality certification, which is approximately one-tenth of the cost of an individual 401 water quality certification. The mitigated negative declaration provides CEQA coverage to projects that are eligible to enroll under the waiver. This saves time and money for project proponents. That way they don't have to have their own individual analyses done. And lastly, the waiver and the general 401 water quality certification are open to non-5C county entities, such as other counties, ranchers, rural road associations, et cetera. So to date, four counties, Humboldt, Del Norte, Trinity, and Mendocino, have enrolled in the waiver. We're waiting for Siskiyou County. We're hoping they'll come along and join soon. We've received 9 project applications with a combined total of 80 road work sites. Staff have conducted, that would be me, I'm the staff, have conducted 5 project inspections with 3 counties. And actually, I was sitting back there counting up on my fingers how many inspections. Actually, 7 have been done, and miles of road and road sites looked at. And these inspections have been done with 3 counties, Humboldt, Del Norte, and Mendocino. And I will be going out tomorrow with Trinity County for their first inspection on their road stuff. So, all right. And next up, I will be, that concludes the 5-county, the 5C waiver. And next, I'll be discussing the Mendocino County Permit Coordination Program. So the Mendocino County Permit Coordination Program was designed to be a one-stop permit shopping, technical guidance, and financial assistance to landowners seeking to restore natural resources on their lands. I will be referring to it as the Permit Coordination Program, just to keep the number of words down. The Permit Coordination Program was developed by the Mendocino Resource Conservation District and the Natural Resources Conservation Service. It is a 10-year program that coordinates the state and federal permits on behalf of landowners for the implementation of conservation practices. In 2013, our board adopted a waiver of waste discharge requirements for the Permit Coordination Program. It also includes, the waiver itself includes a general 401 water quality certification, just like the 5C waiver does. And a programmatic mitigated negative declaration was prepared, which was funded through a grant through our TMDL discretionary funds. Okay, so the program works as follows. The RCD establishes a working contract with a landowner to get the work done on their property. Early each year, the RCD submits to us a proposed work plan for projects they would like to enroll in the permit coordination program. They would like to enroll under our waiver. All the agencies get a chance to review the proposed work plan and conduct project inspections. After the proposals are reviewed, we issue notification of coverage and 401 certification if needed to the RCDs. And then during and following implementation, the RCD conducts monitoring of the projects and submits a report on the status and outcome of each of the projects. So the waiver for the Permit Coordination Program was adopted in November of 2013. And during the summer of 2014, the following projects have been implemented as part of the Permit Coordination Program. So two barriers to anadromous fish passage are being removed. They might have been completed by now. Are being removed on one private property and county properties in the Navarro watershed. The 26 stream crossings and 1.75 miles of roads are being upgraded in the Russian River watershed. And 60 stream crossing upgrades and 9 crossings decommissionings will be done in the Garcia River. Additionally, 11 miles of road are being hydrologically disconnected from the stream network. And so that concludes the update on the Mendocino County Permit Coordination Program. Next up, we have John Sherman from the U.S. Forest Service. I believe he'll be, and Tom William as well. We'll be talking about the U.S. Forest Service waiver that we have and the U.S. Forest Service road program. There we go.
Tom Williams again. Okay, so over half of the North Coast region is in National Forest Service land. The U.S. Forest Service non-point source waiver was adopted by the board back in 2010. And it addresses water quality impacts from timber harvesting, roads, grazing, recreation, vegetation management, restoration, and fire suppression. So the waiver divides projects into either Category A or Category B activities. Category A projects have a low potential impact to water quality, such as things like Christmas tree farms, hazard tree removals along their road systems, things like that. There's no application requirements for Category A projects, but we can come in and review files if we have concerns about any of those projects. Category B projects have a moderate potential impact to water quality, such as fuels thinning projects, fire salvage projects, restoration, roads upgrading projects. For Category B projects, the Forest Service is required to submit an application for waiver coverage to the Regional Water Board, and we're actively involved in the process for granting the waiver coverage, so it's reviewed by Regional Water Board staff. The Forest Service waiver is up for renewal in 2015, so you'll be hearing more about this in the coming year. Here from the U.S. Forest Service Regional Office in Vallejo is John Sherman, who will be talking next about the U.S. Forest Service roads program.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for the opportunity. I was asked to come and participate in this. I'm pleased to be here with you today. I am the Regional Transportation Management Engineer. My name is John Sherman, and I do work for the Pacific Southwest region out of Vallejo. I'm going to talk briefly about an overview of our program on forest roads, covering water quality. Going back to the inception of the forest, it was originally noted that one of the primary purposes for setting aside these federal lands and putting them into Forest Service management was to deal with water quality issues. That is recorded in the Organic Administration Act of 1897 and also was repeated in the Transfer Act enacted in 1905. I pulled this slide from a previous presentation that you had received. This shows an outline of the area of your jurisdiction and the acreage that we manage. There are portions of five national forests that lie within your area of concern. This is a snapshot of the transportation system that exists on those five forests. Not every mile that is shown in here is within the area you're looking at, but this was a quick summary of what we deal with on the forest. These are the miles that are within our jurisdiction. They do not capture the miles that exist on the forest that are managed by somebody else, either a county or, for instance, private roads. We typically track our mileage and categorize it in three areas. Local roads, as you can see from the chart, are the primary bulk of the mileage that we manage. Collector roads are the ones that join the local roads to the arterials, and the arterials are the roads that normally would lead you back to a county road or a state highway. And I want to talk a little bit about road location, and this also relates to design. When I started with the Forest Service, I was a road designer. That was back in the 1970s, and our philosophy back then was much different. We were taught that drainage was the primary concern. If you didn't take care of the drainage, you weren't going to keep the road. So it would be typical for us to design a road with an insloped section, capture the water runoff into a ditch, carry it down to a cross drain, and then if necessary, we would be putting it into carrying it across the road and then dispersing the flow with riprap. And nowadays, the road design is handled a little bit differently. You've heard the term disconnection, and that is the goal that we have. The other way that we term it is that we would like the roads to be hydrologically invisible. In other words, the sheet flow comes down, it hits the road, and when it exits the road, it's not carrying sediment and it has not been concentrated. Obviously, that doesn't always happen, but that is the overall goal. The other thing that I'd like to emphasize is that road location makes a difference. The Klamath National Forest was one of the first ones where our researchers did a lot of study on the impacts of where the roads are, and obviously one that is adjacent to a water course is going to have a much greater impact or the potential for that than one that's located on a ridgetop. I'm going to shift now into a brief overview of the BMP program. We are directed to practice best management practices whenever we do management actions on Forest Service lands. We have a national set of BMPs. These were updated back in 2012. And in part, they are built on a recognition that in this region, we already had an established program that goes back 20 years, and it was effective. We have Region 5 BMPs. This is from an update effort that took place in 2011. The goal is to control non-point source pollution that may occur as a result of road and motorized trail management activities. And in both cases, we do have what I would call a cookbook of BMPs that road designers, road managers are to follow whenever they're dealing with roads. And the other point that I'd like to make is that the national ones don't replace the regional ones. The intent is that project-specific BMPs are supposed to be pulled from this and then tailored to the particular circumstances on the ground. The Forest Service currently has the goal of ecological restoration. It's part of our leader's intent. You may have already heard of that. It has been something that there's been a lot of publicity about it. And there's a recognition that it involves replacing lost or damaged biological elements, reestablishing ecological processes, and the quality of water is a key to that. One of the tools that we are using currently to deal with ecological restoration is a watershed condition framework, which is abbreviated up here as WCF. It's a six-step process. Your staff asked me to briefly address this. We go through, we do a classification of watersheds. We identify those and put them into to categories depending on how impaired they are. We prioritize them for restoration. Typically, every forest picks between 2 and 5 watersheds that they establish as a priority. We develop watershed restoration action plans, and those will identify typically a suite of projects that could include maintenance of roads, storm proofing, decommissioning, vegetation treatments. It varies depending on what that particular watershed needs. Step 4 is the implementation, and that's one that I'm more familiar with. It is something that all of the forests that you're dealing with are at that stage right now, and they are working on their priority watersheds. I forget the exact numbers, but the Klamath, for example, to give you an idea, they have, I think, over 60 watersheds. So when I'm talking about priority watersheds, obviously, this is just a start. And we do have a component where we verify and we monitor the watershed condition class. This is the current status. The first 2 steps are done. The watershed restoration action plans have been done on the priority watersheds, and the implementation is in progress. This is an example of what one would look like. This is the Parks Creek watershed. I believe that your staff is familiar with this. The action plan has actually been shared with staff. This is a summary of what's being done in this area. This is located on the Shasta Trinity National Forest. They're going through and they're decommissioning 21.5 miles, closing another 3.3. There's maintenance, which includes stormproofing on 43.8. They're reconstructing 27 miles, and then there's also trail work that's being done in connection with this plan. And the forest has submitted for legacy funds and has been approved in 2015 and 2016. They'll be expending roughly $250,000 in each year on those activities, and they anticipate that that will be enough for them to actually treat with all of the problem areas that they've got in this particular one. You've heard the discussion about fire, and I'd be reticent if I didn't admit that we're dealing with a dynamic system. You know, despite our efforts to control things, when a fire occurs, it does have impacts on the watershed. There are two ways that we normally deal with this. One is that during the suppression activities, we do have a source of funds that we can use to immediately deal with the impacts of the fire and the impacts of the efforts to suppress it, the lines that have been cut in to control it, any other treatments that have been done. And as a follow-up to that, we also have BEAR funds, and I've heard a mention of it already this morning, where we get burned area emergency rehab money to go in, and the idea is to stabilize a burned area before the next winter arrives and has an impact on it. So watershed condition framework, the future goal is that we will use it for ecological restoration, and that will impact water quality. But I don't want to leave you with an idea that we're underestimating the size of the problem. You know, as I've mentioned, the forests have gone through, and typically they've identified between 2 and 5 priority watersheds they're working on. They have a much larger area that they need to treat. And treating with a single watershed area can take anywhere from 2 to 5 years, depending on sources of funding and completion of NEPA, you know, the standard stuff that you go through with project implementation. So that ends what I had prepared. So, Maggie. Great.
Thank you. You were ready? Yeah, we're ready for the to go back to the other ones. Okay, next up is Mona Doherty. She's going to be talking about NPDES permits.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm Mona Doherty, a senior engineer with your staff, and I supervise our stormwater and wastewater programs. I'm going to wait until we have the slides up.
So oh, okay. Can you go later in to this part of the presentation? It's going to take a long time. It's quite a ways in.
It's close to the end.
A little bit, going further.
72.
So I wanted to talk about some other types of programs that we handle roads under. So in addition to sediment, there are other pollutants of concern associated with roads, construction, maintenance, and operation. These are petroleum hydrocarbons, metals such as copper, zinc, lead, and mercury, and trash. Roads also contribute to hydro modification impacts. The amount of impervious surface or compacted road surface can result in an increase in duration and intensity of storm events and that runoff, which can cause bed and bank erosion and sedimentation. In 1987, the Clean Water Act was amended to include a national pollutant discharge elimination system, stormwater permits for municipal and industrial, including construction, sources. Some of our roads are covered under these point source NPDES permits to minimize the discharge of pollutants and excess flows to surface waters. So I want to talk a little bit about these three stormwater programs. So our stormwater permits include the construction general stormwater permit. This is for construction projects, including roads of an acre or larger in size. It requires best management practices for controlling sediment and industrial pollutants from construction activities and monitoring of runoff. And just like the industrial stormwater permit that I'll talk about next, it requires best practicable treatment and control of pollutants to achieve water quality standards within an iterative process. So our industrial general stormwater permit applies to specific industries, regardless of size. These include, for example, quarries, solid waste facilities, rock and concrete processing facilities, composting and soil mixing facilities, vehicle dismantlers, and many others. So the industrial facility roads need best management practices to control discharge of pollutants using best practicable treatment and control, again, to achieve water quality standards. So our municipal stormwater permits, the goal of these permits are to reduce pollution and stormwater runoff entering a municipal storm drain system to the maximum extent practicable to achieve water quality standards within an iterative process. The municipal permits are broken into two different categories. Phase one is for medium and large communities and their interconnected storm drain systems. Phase two municipal permits are for small municipalities. And the largest system of roads in our state, which is Caltrans, California Department of Transportation, they do have a phase one municipal stormwater permit that covers all their roads, facilities, and activities. This is a state board permit, but it is implemented by each regional water board in their region. Caltrans also uses the construction general stormwater permit for their road construction projects that are an acre or larger. So best management practices and stormwater permits are required to address road construction and maintenance as a source of pollution. Example best management practices implemented during road paving maintenance and construction activities include limiting the activities during rain events, protecting storm drain inlets during construction and paving, proper waste handling and disposal, and proper stockpile management, as well as street sweeping. So aside from the statewide Caltrans municipal stormwater permit, we have a phase one municipal permit in our region, has 10 co-permittees. All of these are within the Russian River watershed. That's a permit that's going to be renewed, and you'll be seeing most likely next March or June for renewal. We also have 12 storm drain systems enrolled in our state board phase two municipal general stormwater permit. And you'll note there that the city of Yreka is enrolled in this permit, and we are working with them to develop their stormwater program. So these permittees also include state parks that were recently designated statewide for municipal stormwater permit coverage, and program development and road assessment for the state parks is just beginning. So the program goal for municipal stormwater permits is to reduce impacts from pollutant discharges from roads, impervious surfaces, urbanization, and to implement TMDLs. To achieve these goals, we continue to designate additional areas for municipal stormwater permit coverage. We require consistent post-construction stormwater treatment, such as low-impact development, to treat pollutants from roads after construction. We require plans to reduce hydromodification impacts caused by changing land uses, removal of vegetation, soil compaction, and hardening. So I want to show a couple of examples of these low-impact development treatment BMPs I've been discussing. So this is a photo of the low-impact development post-construction stormwater treatment. These are bioswales on urbanized roads. This type of stormwater treatment can be used on rural roads in addition, without curbs as well. So, and just like any other best management practice, routine inspection and maintenance is essential to ensure the effectiveness of bioswales. So typical maintenance includes trash removal, vegetation maintenance, fixing any areas of erosion or scour. And there's also long-term maintenance, which happens a lot less frequently, which is sometimes the soil matrix for these treatment BMPs need to be replaced to maintain the treatment capacity and infiltration. And finally, here is a roadside rain garden used to treat stormwater runoff. Use of low-impact development treatment removes pollutants and stormwater runoff, also slows the velocity of runoff, and reduces the volume of stormwater leaving the site to more closely mimic the site's natural hydrology before urbanization or changed land use. Increased volume and velocity of runoff from impervious surfaces may cause hydromodification, increased erosion, and may damage the structural integrity and habitat value of receiving waters. And now, just like before, we wanted to pause the presentation and see if the board members had any questions for any of the speakers before we resume.
I have a little bit of a comment with a question attached to it, I guess. And that is regarding where there are roads being relocated and where there are trees being removed that may not be actually harvested for timber products. I see an opportunity there that those products could potentially be moved into streams to develop more habitat complexity. You know, you already have equipment on site working on the roads. The Department of Fish and Wildlife is encouraging this on roads projects where that are covered under their grant program. And so I think if regional board staff had ways of encouraging that, there would be a real opportunity there for a cost-effective way of improving fisheries-related beneficial uses in those waterways. So that's my comment, and my question is if you're seeing any of that in your interaction with road systems.
Maggie Robinson, I've seen, for the timber roads, I've had many conversations with foresters regarding use of trees, and they are being used, especially Humboldt Redwood Company. They're very proactive in using wood for their, when they're doing repair work or crossing removal, they're stabilizing the excavated stream channels with wood they've procured on site. I don't know what they're doing with their, I've seen root wads laying about, and I'm not sure what they're doing. I have mentioned to them that, wow, that'd be really great if you use that, or if you could get that to somebody for a restoration project. But I haven't done anything formal with the timber companies or even the counties.
In Sonoma County, got a lot of press attention with Caltrans road, the new off-ramps in north of Santa Rosa, and redwoods removed. And those trees were actually purchased by the Sonoma County Water Agency as part of the Dry Creek habitat restoration projects. So that was done. It was a little controversial because the county paid for the trees. But that was one example of what you're asking about.
Board Member Goose,
did you want to finish?
Oh, I was going to say, Jonathan Warmerdam might know more about this, but perhaps in the Mendocino County Permit Coordination Program, they could very well, I could see that being done as part of that program.
Can we back up a slide? So the rain garden is as attractive and aesthetically pleasing as that is, and the utility of it, the first thing I thought of when I saw that garden in the middle of the road is we may call it a rain garden, deer might call it bait. And so I just want to remind people that there are other issues to deal with, especially when we're dealing with big municipal roads, and if we may end up causing one problem to solve another. So always remind ourselves to think about where we're doing it, what it is we're trying to accomplish, and what some of the unintended consequences may be.
Yes, this photo is not in our region.
That's good. that makes me real happy.
We have some similar type projects being developed in our region, but I didn't have any photos of them finished yet. Yeah. So all these photos are not within our region. And I would agree, you know, one of the things that Caltrans does look at when they are looking at their stormwater treatment is they do look at attractive nuisance issues and wildlife issues. So I appreciate your point, and in some cases being looked at, probably not every municipality is doing the best job at looking at that as they should be.
Well, and even innocently, if you'll notice, as we get late into the summer on most municipal highways, you'll notice that deer are often concentrated right by the side of the road, and they're often in bore ditches, and that's where the last little bit of green vegetation holds on into the summer. So, again, what can be very innocent and well-intentioned can add to another problem, adding hazards to people who are, you know, using the road. So just a point I wanted to make. But
thank you.
That was good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
May I ask a question, too? You know, a lot of these programs, as you described, the FICE program and the Mendocino Coordinated Program, is intentional to have a programmatic approach to these. With the combination of the Phase 1 and Phase 2s, especially in the southern end of our region, do you see an opportunity? You and I, Maggie, have talked about the Fishnet 4C manual. Sonoma County is an outlier. It's not part of the FICE program. Do you see an opportunity to perhaps update or revise the Fishnet 4C program into something that could be viable for rural roads in Sonoma County?
It could be. It's my understanding that Sonoma County is actually using the 5C road manual at the moment. And Mona can talk to that as well. But yeah, I can definitely see having them brought into the 5C program. In fact, we have had meetings scheduled with Sonoma County. They seem to be excited about it. It's just a matter of getting together with them and letting them know, you know, giving them an informational meeting as to what it really entails, what the benefits are, and also what the requirements are. See if it's a good fit
Great.
For them. And then here's Mona.
I just wanted to comment on that. The stormwater permit that covers the Laguna watershed and is going to be extended to many portions of the Russian River watershed requires use of the 4C manual. We did work with some folks in Region 2 in looking at that manual, and we required it in that permit because we thought it was a better manual to address some of the urban issues. And in Sonoma County, we have a mix of urban and rural issues. So we required that, but we also said you can use an equivalent. So they have been using the 5C manual, both within their municipal stormwater permit area as required by the permit, but then also they have already extended its use throughout the entire county. Now, one point to note, though, that we've had some concern about is that their road staff tells us that they use the 5C manual reliably, but there's been some discomfort about taking it to the Board of Supervisors. So that will be one topic that we will be discussing with them in the future.
Well, the one attractive, it seems to me, that using 5C seems like it's just fine to me. In fact, it seems advantageous from the standpoint that it has programmatic CEQA documents that are attached to it with the permitting. It streamlines that. And further, it allows an enrollment and an intention to have a project rollout on a priority basis that allows the county some flexibility, but yet it gives them a streamlined and efficient permitting process. It just strikes me that the 4C fishnet 4C manual is old and outdated, and I don't know if it has any of that type of language in it or allowance for programmatic use of, say, a CEQA doc. At the same time, if they're using 5C, I'm missing my C's, the 5C seems like it would be appropriate, and I like the or equivalent, I guess, so that's fine. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, Maggie Robinson. So we have wrapped up our segment on the existing regulations that we have. We wanted to take a moment. I think questions have been answered. So we've gone through why roads are important, the existing permits and programs. And next, we're going to be going over the gaps in our current regulation, as well as our rural roads education and outreach program. So Tom Williams will be speaking to that next.
And I did want to ask, how long are you going to go? Because we're getting close to...
We're almost done. Just a few more minutes.
Okay.
Okay.
Hi. Tom Williams again. So we've kind of talked about our overall regulatory program dealing with roads, and we have identified some gaps in the regulation of roads as part of these various programs. You know, one of the gaps has to do with private rural roads, including road associations and ranch roads, and just a few of the other things that aren't covered at this point is like county parks and the BLM and national parks. So we have developed this new program that we're calling the Rural Roads Educational and Outreach Program to try to address some of these gaps. You know, rural roads have long been recognized as a significant source of sediment to watercourses and to the impairment of beneficial uses. And there currently is no single comprehensive nine-point source program that specifically addresses sediment discharges from roads, especially rural roads. So we're hoping that the development and implementation of a rural roads education outreach program will begin to address this significant source of nonpoint source pollution in the North Coast region. So the purpose of this rural roads education outreach program is to provide technical information and assistance on proper road design and maintenance, provide funding information for road restoration projects, to outreach to our partners in different parts of the North Coast region, and to conduct field tours and presentations. There have been two recent developments that have advanced our efforts to address sediment discharges from rural roads, one of which, as Maggie has gone over, adoption of the 5C waiver in 2013, which includes a mechanism for waiver coverage for other non-county entities, including road associations. subject to public notice and approval by our executive officer.
Right.
So the second development is that has aided our efforts to move ahead with the rural roads is this recent update of the Handbook for Forest Ranch and Rural Roads that was prepared by Pacific Watershed Associates and the Mendocino County Resource Conservation District under a 319H grant. So in 2014, just very recently, Pacific Watershed Associates finished the update, this update of this new manual. It was funded through the Garcia TMDL Headwaters grant and co-funded by CAL FIRE.
And then I want to put you on 2 minutes to sum up.
Sure. The update is also available in a Spanish translation and builds upon newer standards and protocols that have evolved over the last 20 years. So this was originally published 20 years ago. The work plan was prepared to implement the Rural Roads Program and includes researching and gathering educational material and references, contacting partners in different parts of the region to develop an outreach strategy, including the 5C program, the various RCDs, and the National Resource Conservation Service. And also we want to talk to the county parks, BLM, and some of the other National Park Service, other agencies that have that are not currently covered. We want to develop a website and fact sheet by early 2015, which will provide links to this new roads manual, the 5C manual, and potential funding sources for doing the work. We're going to be developing and giving presentations through 2014 to rural road associations and other interested parties, and conduct 3 or 4 field tours in different areas of our region by the end of 2015. The tours are going to focus on implementing simple road drainage techniques that can be installed by hand or with small equipment to reduce sediment impacts to water quality.
There you go. And that concludes our presentation.
Okay. I think we're going to adjourn for lunch. We'll be back here in 1 hour and 15 minutes. We'll open it up for board questions. The public has a right to comment. And then we want to move on to the Klamath presentation.
Okay, great.
And thank you for obviously a thorough job.